The Pac-12 apostles are back. Lot to go over. One of the great coaches in college basketball history, Lute Olson, passes away. The Pac-12 is undergoing a massive overhaul, going around, not through, Larry Scott. President Trump tries to help the Big Ten get back to football. Why wasn't the Pac-12 included? Viral tweets about Pac-12 apathy. Is it real? The conference lays off 88 people. Who is to blame? And of course, your listener emails. I'm George Reister. He's Ralph Amsden. And this is the Pac-12 Apostles. Thank you guys for listening to the Pac-12 Apostles. We appreciate your time. We appreciate your energy. Thank you for listening. Please make sure you leave a 5-star review, even though Ralph will tell you otherwise, wherever you listen to podcasts. And of course, leave a comment and share with a friend. And you can get a hold of us. I'm Mad, I-M-M-A-D, at unafraidshow.com. We always address your emails. You can reach us on Twitter at Pac-12 Apostles. So much to talk about. Let's get to the show. Ralph, we had to take a break for a little bit, man. It was, emotions were running high. You know, it was 11 degrees outside in Arizona, and out here in California, it was baking. There was so much. We needed to take a break so we could recenter and get ourselves back together to bring more great content.
I hope that our listeners understand, and we might have some listeners that are not based in Southern California or Arizona, that like it's not just hot. The record for most 110 degree days in the history of Arizona is 33, until this year, where we hit 50 last week, and this upcoming Saturday, Sunday, Monday are supposed to be 51, 52, and 53. So how about that for 150% of the hottest year ever, which I think might have been 2011 or something. A normal year is about 25. So this is double normal. We set the record for most 115 degree days by a lot. We set the record for most 110 degree days by a lot. All of my energy during the break with you and I not recording was completely dedicated to keeping my plants alive and from not just catching on fire in my yard. So it seems in a year that has been a metaphorical hell for so many people, literal hell has decided to peek its head up out of the ground out here in the desert. And it's not been a whole lot of fun.
See, I think it's always very important for you to take time to get yourself back together mentally, emotionally, and all of that. And Ralph had a very tough time, as we saw in the last podcast, with the fact that the season was coming to a close. He was mourning. And so that was a big thing as well. And, you know, getting the family back together, kids going back to school-ish. So, you know, making sure everything is right. So we are back and we are happy to be with you guys. One of the things that did happen, and we want to pay homage to one of the greatest coaches, not only just in Pac-12 history, but in NCAA history, in Lute Olson. So he passed away. I knew Lute because he was, so I came out, was friends with Gilbert Arenas, who played at Arizona from the time that in high school. We played with each other, travel teams, all of that. And when I got recruited, I was a football player, but I also had basketball scholarship offers. And Lute Olson wanted me to come down to Arizona, walk onto the basketball team. He was like, yo, there's a spot on the basketball team for you. I believe that you can play here, you know, but you got to come play football at Arizona. And I was literally considering that. And so he was a good man. I appreciated him. You know, 4 Final Fours while he was at Arizona, 11-time Pac-10 champion. And the 1997 national championship, which was a hell of a run. And the man was just absolutely outstanding.
Yeah. I will say that he's probably, I mean, if Tucson had a king, right, he's the most important man in the history of that town outside of whoever set up shop first. I mean, that's somebody who always conducted himself with class and grace, and was really able to build a program from scratch, put a ton of guys in the NBA. I know my my best friend in the entire world was my aunt, who passed away a couple of years ago, but she lived down in Sierra Vista when Steve Kerr and Sean Elliott were out there balling at University of Arizona, and forever fell in love with that program and was absolutely elated when that 97 team was able to make that run. And I mean, what a run that was. I think from that tournament, I think what most people remember is University of Kansas coming in as a number one seed at 34-1 with Paul Pierce and Jacques Vaughn and Scott Pollard. You know, I think they had four NBA players in the lineup, and then they get knocked out by U of A, and then U of A takes out the major Cinderella in Providence and God Sham God. And then they have to face two number ones on the way to winning a championship in both University of North Carolina and University of Kentucky. And Kentucky had Ron Mercer and Nazi Muhammad, and that North Carolina team had, I mean, I think Anton Jameson and Vince Carter. And so that run that that U of A team went on with Miles Simon, Mike Bibby, Michael Dickerson, and Jason Terry coming off the bench, you know, that forever cemented Lute Olson's legacy as a winner and a champion, because, I mean, he brought it every single year, and he got recruits every single year, and he put people in the NBA every single year. He dominated the Territorial Cup rivalry almost year in and year out. And so, you know, he always would have been absolutely revered, but to legitimize things and get the state of Arizona its first real championship, because I know Arizona State football had one of those ones that you just kind of had to claim it because there was no consensus type championships. But this one was actually, you know, you played a playoff. And so, you know, probably one of the most important figures in the history of Arizona sports in Pac-8, Pac-10, Pac-12. History and just left an incredible legacy and touched a bunch of people's lives. And you could just, I mean, you could just a laundry list of people who came up under him, whether it's Andre Iguodala or Channing Frye, you know, I mean, it's just, you could go on and on and on, especially the guards that came out of his program. You know, Damon Stoudemire being chief amongst them, Gilbert Arenas, you know, it goes on and on and on. And I could talk for days about the players that came through there and getting to see them up close. Salim Stoudemire, what he did with Salim Stoudemire, the fact that he got guys to play for him that didn't necessarily have the ability to go play anywhere else, whether it's Salim Stoudemire or Michael Dickerson, you know, some of the greatest college basketball performances of all time. And he's going to be missed. And, you know, it's within reason to say that he is the best, you know, outside of John Wooden, the best coach that any of these schools within the Pac-12, you know, there's probably an argument for maybe a guy like Rick Majerus or something like that. I think you can really make an argument for somebody who built a program from nothing and has meant the absolute world, and the success has sustained after he's left. The ability to recruit has sustained after he's left. And you and I can knock Tucson as a Pac-12 city not being one of the top cities, but it doesn't matter. These guys know that they're just going to spend 1 or 2 years there and then go and make a tremendous amount of money in the NBA. And he deserves a lot of love and a lot of respect, and he'll be missed.
We do have two new ratings that we do have to discuss, though, Ralph. Okay. Two new ratings. And I usually let you read them, but I forgot to tell you about this in the beginning, so I will read them.
So it'll be like a nice surprise for me, because I didn't even know they were there.
Yeah, so here is one from August 19th. I'm going to read this one first on purpose. I'm changing. This is from Erod CA. I'm changing my previous 4-star review to a 5-star review for two good reasons. I appreciate George acknowledging that ASU is a rising star along with Jaden Daniels. Thank you, Ralph, for also highlighting ASU as a great team and future. It's all I was asking. Forks up kudos. The second reason behind the five-star review is acknowledging as true adults that we have no football due to President Trump's lack of leadership. If Pac-12 fans can't see that at this point, America's in real trouble or will continue to be in trouble. I'll keep listening, gentlemen. Thank you. The next one is, George is a good human, doesn't know his bees. this is from George Fan 123. I have been listening to the podcast since its inception.
No I've been waiting.
Yeah, I've been waiting to review, but tonight forced a decision. Pac-12 content has generally been good, but George knows nothing about bee biology. For that reason, I unfortunately have to reduce my rating by 1 star. This isn't fair because I tweeted about the
so lost. Is this based off something you tweeted?
Yes. So I tweeted out this picture.
You cost us a 5-star and okay, again, not a competitive person, but you cost us a 5-star review and you're going to blame it on me that we got a 4-star because I welcome them if there's legitimate criticism, but this is outside the bounds of what we do together. Also, he misspelled your name, which is pretty funny.
Oh, yeah.
Garogi fan.
I tweeted a picture of a bee that had died on my pool cover. This was like a dinosaur bee. A dinosaur bee.
I remember this tweet.
And I was like, is this a murder hornet? Is this the thing had fur on it. Fur. So I'm like, I don't know what the hell this thing is. And I was just like, do I need to be afraid, really? And people told me that it was a carpenter bee.
Yeah.
And I was like, this feels giant if it is a carpenter bee. Mind you, I don't know bee biology. I just know I wouldn't know a honeybee from a, now I know what a carpenter bee is, but I mean, are they dangerous?
Not really. I mean, I freak out more when I see a carpenter bee. They're super common. They're alone, almost always alone, and they're very lumbering when they fly, and it makes a really loud noise. And they have a tendency to kind of like steer at the last second. So if you have one flying towards your head, like they're not going to hit you, but it's going to be close. And so every time I've ever encountered one, it's because it's doing some pod racing type flying, past my head. And it always freaks me out. And I know that they're harmless. Yeah. Yeah, they do. They do. They just kind of, they give you that low overhead flight. So I don't care for them for that reason, but I've never heard of anybody ever getting stung by one. I do want to point out though, I think he is obliged to actually restore it to a 5-star review, because if it's bee biology he's worried about, then the issue would be you not understanding like that it was a bee in the first place. I think your issue is like bee genealogy, which if he doesn't have a problem with that, then he needs to go in there and give us that extra star.
Yep. And it was outside of the bounds of the podcast. That's true. Where
we did. I did interact with you on the tweet though. So it is that we'd have to send that one to the judges.
So is this a fair review? I mean, a fair star review is the question. The next thing up though is the Pac-12. They are looking at a massive overhaul of the conference. So this is being reported by John Wilner and a couple other people. So the Pac-12 presidents and chancellors are considering a major overhaul to the quote unquote entire structure and composition of the conference, including contract issues and other things like that. So they would, hire a media consultant who would be giving a who would be given authority to work independently of Commissioner Larry Scott and report directly to the president. What is your first thought when you hear that, Ralph?
Anytime that you have to do a massive restructuring of your business, it's because something's going wrong. You don't massively restructure your business unless you either are failing miserably or you just have a massive infusion of capital that allows you to play out what your wish list is for your business to ultimately look like. So you do not restructure when things are going well. You restructure when you're trying to survive or when you're trying to accelerate. And this conference is not trying to accelerate, not after laying 88 people off, not after letting Mike Yam's contract expire, not after the embarrassment of everything that came out about them trying to pay to have an LA Times reporter in their pocket, not after blowing it with the DirecTV negotiations, not after not being able to get a deal done with Hulu or YouTube. There's not after not being able to get teams in the college football playoff, not after being behind in revenue and not being able to hold on to their own coaches, their own major coaches, not after the sports that they claim are the ones that we should be most proudest of or the ones that are being cut completely by University of Stanford, and not after potentially being the only conference to not actually be playing football this fall. So there is nothing is accelerating except for the demise. You restructure because of failure and you fail because leadership failed. And so, you know, that's my take on it. Is there any other take to have?
Well, I think that your take is 100% right. My initial thought though was, okay, so you're hiring a consultant to go over the media stuff to try to figure that out. But you're paying Larry Scott. You're paying him $5.4 million. Granted, he took a 10% pay cut, so he's at what, like 4.8? I mean, sorry, 4.6. So what are you paying him for? I mean, this is what's been the ultimate failure, is the fact that Larry Scott has just been a grifter to the Pac-12. And we have said it over and over again. Like, if he was a plant from the SEC to screw up the Pac-12, what would he have done differently? And I can't tell you what the answer to that is, because if there's no reason that the conference should need a quote unquote overhaul, because everybody's looking at these at the TV contracts up that aren't up until 2020. What was 2024? That's when you're going to get a new deal, but you can start negotiating in 2021 or 2022. So the issue with it is this, is that those are like the ESPN, Fox contracts and all of that. But you have the issue. The first issue is the Pac-12 networks contracts, which the schools collaborate and own their own stuff. So you have the Arizona schools, the Northwest, you have the LA, the Mountain, all of that. So they all have their own situations going. It would make sense, being that they're only available in 18 million homes. Now, Ralph, as a business person who has negotiated my way in and out of deals, I will tell you this, is that when you have if I have a situation and I have an exclusive rights deal, but my availability is limited, and that means that my capital is limited and my future prospects are limited as well. If somebody comes to me and says, look, George, I will let me take half of your business, and instead of you being in 18 million homes, I'll get you in 120 million homes and triple your payouts to each school, at least double your payouts to each school. What am I going to do, Ralph? I'm going to take it. Owning 100% of something that's very little is less valuable than owning 50% of something major and something big. And that's where Larry Scott's biggest failure has happened. And he's been able to grift and convince people, the presidents, well, the old presidents, that he should still be the guy in charge. And it's clear that he shouldn't. If you need a massive overhaul, that means that includes Larry Scott.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I was thinking about this the other day because, you know, sometimes it's hard to find compassion for some of the people that are caught up in this enormous failure. You know, the people who worked for the Pac-12, they just wanted a job. You know, that they're most people when they're in a position of, you know, TV production or social media, you know, they're not fans. Everybody's a mercenary. The same with college coaches or anybody else. You are as enthusiastic as your paycheck tells you to be, right? Yeah. So you have all of these people that are fully aware that there are plenty of problems with the way that the conference is run. And unfortunately for them, you know, they're not going to espouse all of those problems while they work there because they're incentivized to keep the status quo and keep the vision of the leader that's in charge. And then ultimately at the end of the day, you know, they end up out of work and that person does not. And I sometimes when you're just repeatedly shouting, something's wrong, something's wrong, something's wrong. And then the ultimate, inevitable result of that comes along, you know, the urge is to say, I told you so. And not necessarily to say, wow, 88 people and Mike Yam are not working where they want to be working. And that's a real life failure that it exists outside of what is going on nationally with coronavirus and everything like that. The truth of the matter is this conference bit off more than it could chew. It overpromised and overdelivered for a long time, and people's livelihoods ultimately ended up suffering because of it. And the more I thought about it, the worse I felt for these people. And the thing that really hammered the point home for me, and if anybody remembers anything that I say in this podcast, I want it to be this. When I was reading Ashley Adamson's thoughts that she posted to Twitter about, and she's an on-air talent for the Pac-12 Network, and I thought she had a really, really great perspective on everything that's going on the loss of her co-anchor, on the loss of her co-workers, and just the rough time that everybody's kind of facing. There was a tidbit that she put in there that I had never once considered, George, because you and I make fun of the fact that they spend all this money in rent all the time. And the thing that never occurred to me that Ashley Adamson pointed out in publishing her very, very eloquent thoughts was, a lot of the people who work for the Pac-12 Network didn't make very much money in the first place. Certainly not enough money to live comfortably in the most expensive city in the world. And so, George, they didn't live in the city. They commuted. The people who worked for the Pac-12 Network made personal sacrifices to get to work every day because the big boss wanted to work in the big expensive building. And so all of the people that worked under him, all, you know, for the most part anyway, a lot of them were having to make massive sacrifices in just their daily commute to get to work every day in order to feed this beast. And that's when it really started to actually tick me off. And that's when it really became more about recognizing the cost of having such poor leadership in place. It didn't just result in the loss of 88 jobs. It also resulted in the lower quality of life of the 88 people while they were employed by the Pac-12. Because they couldn't afford to live in San Francisco. They couldn't, if had this been in Vegas or Phoenix or even in Southern California, it would have been a different situation. But Ashley Adamson pointing out all the sacrifices that so many of those people that got laid off had to make in order to even get to work in the first place really got me thinking as to how Larry Scott and the way that he does things affects people in their day to day, outside of even just the very obvious loss of the job and loss of revenue for the schools.
Well,
his inability to lead and his inability to, and it all goes back to the time that he called a big meeting with the employees of the Pac-12, in which they all figured that they were going to announce a DirecTV deal, and he used it to announce his contract extension. Like, what a ridiculous human being.
Tone deaf, dude. Yeah. And dude, Ralph, that was a fantastic point, dude. Absolutely fantastic. Just because the thing that stuck out to me about the 88 people from the Pac-12 networks who were laid off, none of them were management. None of them. And instead of doing something sensible, like moving the headquarters, instead of spending $7 million, the SEC spends like 1.6. You could spend $1.6 million in rent and move your headquarters to Vegas, move it to where you could move it to industrial parts of LA, where you do your where they do Pac-12 Media Day. You could move it to Arizona, anything to be fiscally responsible for the conference. And that's what is just so troubling about it. Like, and the dude has a $1.9 million loan that he hasn't paid back. And the idea that you would take a 10% pay cut, keep the management, but then you're laying off people who run your website, who run your Twitter accounts, all of this stuff, like that's who you lay off. I mean, it is just asinine to me that you could have the Pac-12 presidents like do this. And then the idea that, so I actually got in a Twitter fight with Rudy Carpenter about this, because he said, oh, well, this is coronavirus's fault. No, it's not. Coronavirus only highlighted a problem that was already there. Like, it magnified a problem. And he said, well, if the coronavirus didn't come, these people would still have their jobs. You're right. But it didn't stop the mismanagement, because if the conference were only spending, you know, $2 million in rent, and you had a commissioner making a salary commensurate with the amount of money that's paid out to each school, which the Big Ten in 2019 paid out $55.6 million. The SEC paid out $45.3 million. Big Ten paid out $40 million. The Pac-12 paid out $32 million. The ACC paid out $31 million, but they were getting a huge bump because of their new network deals. So they're going to be in third place. So that puts the Pac-12 last. And that is the problem, is the fact that you're third in the amount of money that you brought in $530 million. But then you come in last as far as the amount of money that you're able to pay out to each school. And you have no plan for how you're going to do your media rights. Your availability is low, only in 18 million homes. And just the fact that, I mean, it disgusts me really to see Larry Scott destroy the conference that I love so much. Like, I'm not going to talk about him as a person because I don't know him like that. And I don't think he's done it intentionally on purpose, but it has been grifty though. Like, it's been very grifty.
Oh, and I mean the mobster accent. Nothing against people from New York, but the mobster accent in the process doesn't do much to alleviate that public image of, you know, this dude is just a union boss siphoning things. Look, the entire thing with a commissioner is it's their job to facilitate and get out of the way. In what way has Larry Scott been a facilitator who has then gotten out of the way and allowed these schools to succeed and sell their product. He hasn't. He hasn't facilitated the deals that it's going to take to get them in more homes and in front of more people. And he has certainly done absolutely nothing to prove his level of competence. The idea that they keep bringing in consultants for every little issue that comes up is the biggest indicator that you don't have the ability to do the job yourself. It's that scene from Elf when James Caan's character goes to, was it Andy Richter and Kyle Gass, and he says, what are we going to do? And they pitch him on hiring another writer. That's the entire Pac-12's business. Like, that was a joke. That was meant to show incompetence in Elf. And with the Pac-12, it's just a reality. It's just a reality. And unfortunately, that I know of, Larry Scott doesn't have a 6'6" son who was raised in the North Pole that can come and teach him lessons about life in order to soften his heart and so that he can figure out what he's doing. So if he doesn't have a giant Elf son that's going to come along, then it's just all of the elements of Elf that include the failure with none of the success.
So you look at the amount of that consultant's cost in between $25,000 and $50,000 per month. That's how much consultants and PR firms cost.
So, and the number one thing that a consultant does, the number one thing that a consultant must do is justify their existence. They have to. They have to come in and say, here is why you need me. The amount of people that have probably bled the Pac-12 for money in the last 10 years, just out of Larry Scott's inability to just have the talent in-house in order to accomplish the things that he wants to accomplish, is probably an amount that rivals the SEC's expenditures for their commissioner's salary and their rent in a single year. And that's crazy to me because they hired all these consultants and they still suck. And anytime that you find out that one of these consultants has any previous ties to Larry Scott, that should let you know that that's corruption. That's like the literal definition of cronyism.
Oh, and that's his boy though. That's his boy from Texas. His Jeff Hunt, the Texas-based public relations expert and Larry Scott confidant. And that he's talking about that. Well, in the articles that they've talked about, $250,000 a year in lunches and learning events that have been at the San Francisco headquarters. And Pac-12 staffers, they used to laugh about it. They used to be like, are you serious? I mean, like,
yeah, there's a real good chance that that guy's name is Mike and not Jeff.
Why do you say that?
I'll let you figure it out on your own.
Okay. So you're looking at well over $1 million paid out in 3 years to crisis management, about the officials, about the LA Times, about all of this crisis management. You're not in a crisis. You need to fix the problem. Like, that it's almost like, so you brought in Larry Scott because he was able to help out with tennis, but then you forget that the fact that tennis also had Serena Williams. I mean, just absolutely. That, I mean, that's like somebody saying that the commissioner of golf helped the PGA ratings in the late 90s, early 2000s. Well, you had Tiger Woods, dude. You had Tiger Woods. It was probably pretty easy. And the Pac-12 needed to be more creative. And the fact that, I've done some venture capital stuff, invested in some startups, done some angel investing, but so maybe I have a little bit of a leg up on like normal people out in the world in terms of seeing some technology that may potentially be coming out. But Larry Scott is in San Francisco. He's near Silicon Valley. He's hanging out, hobnobbing with rich people and powerful people in tech. So 13 miles
from Google. Like if the whole goal was to be close to these people, they're 13 miles or something like that, or 13 minutes. One of the two that I read from Google, and they're one of the only conferences that does not have a deal with YouTube TV.
Dude, how? I mean, dude, that I've been saying that from the beginning. I was like, just forget DirecTV. Don't even go after them. Just go after Hulu TV and YouTube TV. Get on both of those because people are cord cutting. And then if you can get on Roku too, whatever, but those are the two that you need to be going to. And then maybe Amazon, if that's available, because I guarantee you that the powers that be in the Pac-12 networks, that they would have said, ooh, this is an opportunity to get in front of a bunch of more homes. Let's do this. Bro, it is just absolutely criminal, and it is tremendously frustrating. Another thing that's been tremendously frustrating for a lot of Pac-12 fans is what's been going on over the last couple of days, because the president, he weighed in on the Big Ten. And the Big Ten, he met with Kevin Warren, called him up after Clay Travis helped broker that meeting. So if anybody doesn't know, let me give you a quick backstory. Clay Travis, obviously, he has a Fox Sports radio show. He does something on Fox Bet, runs Outkick. It used to be a, you know, SEC sports site, but now it's turned into a pretty right-leaning, you know, site for Jason Whitlock to take hits on LeBron James, other black athletes, and Clay to do his thing. But recently, they developed a partnership, a friendship, if you will, with the White House, which then led to, I think, Donald Trump Jr. and Donald Trump ending up on Outkick on Clay Travis's radio, on his morning radio show.
And just as a trigger warning real quick, we are going to be talking about the president of the United States because it's the topic at hand. We did get an email saying never to bring up the president ever again. But I will say, like, that if you have some type of political leaning, and odds are there are plenty of people who listen to this podcast that aren't just right leaning, and I would consider myself to be right leaning, but are actually of the ilk of, you know, that new thing where we have that it's like literally Trump supporter. You are outside of party. You are actually a supporter of this man, whatever his platform is. You're going to follow him into battle. He's your guy. So the odds are there's a lot of people listening to this that feel like, hey, this dude is our guy, and you know, their ears are going to perk up if they feel like we're treating him unfairly. And you and I, we had said, like, hey, who do we blame for the fact that there's no football, if you had to blame somebody? And to me, the buck always stops at the top. We just spent a long time ripping Larry Scott. We don't get any emails about that. That if there's something going on that's countrywide, and this person that emailed us pointed out all the things that she felt like the president did correctly, and you are absolutely entitled to taking those pieces of the puzzle and telling us that, you know, it's a hot air balloon and not a trash can, that the entire puzzle is made up of. I definitely have a different view on it. And for me, doesn't matter who's in office, the buck always stops at the top. So if the Pac-12 is not going to have football, I can point out 10 to 12 policy differences, attitudes, tweets, and all those things that I feel like factored into that. And I'm, you know, I'll be very, very honest in saying that is illustrative also of how I feel about, the current office and the direction of the country. But at the same time, I felt personally like I was being logical in that circumstance. But that the part of that email said that if we brought up Donald Trump's name again, she's never going to listen again. Well, Donald Trump brought his own name up into the college football scene, and we have no choice but to talk about it. So I do hope that you'll hang in there with us as a listener. We appreciate you. But if he's going to be talking college football and we're a college football podcast, we got to talk Donald Trump.
Yeah, you cared a lot more about that than I did. I just look at all these things as wrapped up into one, because you can't, the idea that we should keep politics out of sports, like, life has never been like that. We boycotted the 1980 Olympics over politics. We have, like, I just testified in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, politics and sports.
I just watched the Ken Burns Jackie Robinson documentary. I'm 4 years late to the table on it, but I wanted to be able to watch 42 with my kids, but I wanted them to have an understanding of who Jackie Robinson was, and I wanted to give them just a deeper appreciation of some of the other stuff that Chadwick Boseman did outside of Black Panther. So we watched the first half of the documentary yesterday, the second half of the documentary today, and the entire time all I could think to myself was, I thought that we were supposed to keep politics and sports separate. Literally everyone in baseball in the 1950s and 60s was straight up endorsing candidates. Jackie Robinson hated JFK's guts. He was a Republican until they refused to break with Barry Goldwater. It literally is parallel of the whole Donald Trump thing of a populist comes in. You have a bunch of people who are Republicans and saying, hey, do we want to hitch our wagon to this guy? And then when they ultimately make the decision not to hitch their wagon to that guy, they get pushed out of the conversation altogether. There were 15 Black delegates headed into the Republican National Convention when Goldwater was running against Lyndon B. Johnson. And Jackie Robinson was one of them. He was a Republican. And because they nominated Barry Goldwater, they pretty much lost the Black vote, the bulk majority of the Black vote forever. Forever. Jackie Robinson literally publicly switched parties because the Republicans nominated Barry Goldwater, and he was an enormous supporter of Richard Nixon. How about that? Politics out of sports. Like, that's all the second half of this documentary was what are Jackie Robinson's politics and what are all the times that he spoke up while he was playing, and what was the reaction to him speaking up? How upset did it make people? And what's crazy is you see a lot of the media that had negative things to say about Jackie Robinson. It might have well as been outkick your coverage. The New Orleans Times-Picayune might as well have been Clay Travis. Like, the stuff they were saying about Jackie Robinson at the time is the same stuff that they say about athletes now, namely LeBron James. And so it's going to be really hard to keep politics out of sports when they've literally never been separate.
Yeah, and the fact that you have politicians regularly interjecting themselves into sports. So back to where we were with President Trump intervening at, you know, like meeting with Kevin, well, having a phone conversation with Kevin Warren that was facilitated by Clay Travis on a some level. So a bit, because Clay has been trying to get football back just in general, forget the long term health effects, because he's now an epidemiologist. And
can we stop one more time? I'm gonna keep interrupting you. Clay Travis is an incredibly smart dude. Yeah. I do not personally believe that he believes all the stuff that he's saying, but at the same time, do you know who he reminds me of? Do you know that David Koresh? Remember the whole Waco FBI
siege? Oh yeah. Or
whatever? David Koresh was an incredibly intelligent, incredibly charismatic dude. And one of the revelations that he came up with for the people that were the Branch Davidians that were actually living in that compound with him is that it was no longer the burden of any of the males that were within that Branch Davidian sect to have sexual relations. That sex was a burden, and therefore he would put that entire burden upon himself so that you would not have to focus on sex. And this include the married man.
So, such a nice guy, right?
Yeah, just an absolutely class dude for taking that burden on himself. He was a very intelligent, very charismatic man who, you know, there is plenty of evidence that he probably believed a little bit more of what he was saying than Clay Travis does. But he said, you know, hey, it's going to be for me. I'm going to be the one to have sex with all the women. You're welcome. And I remember Clay Travis got his whole start trying to drive politics out of sports. And yep. Now he has taken upon the burden of being political within sports for everybody else. Yep. And it reminds me very much of David Koresh. We've created a religion of OutKick, of Clay Travis fans, who all came together under the banner of keeping political discussion out of sports coverage and pushing back against the ever-increasing woke majority of loud voices that are out there and the liberal media and whatever else you want to call it. And in order to push back, you have to take that burden upon yourself. And Clay Travis has made OutKick into the giant it is today upon the foundation of being political. So how about that?
You are 100% right again.
I'm also done interrupting. I'm tapping out. I'm so sorry.
No, these are great points, though. So keep interrupting whenever you have something.
We had 2 weeks off in which I was addressing the very real. I mean, we kind of joked about it, but the very real, like, mental health issues that came out of not knowing whether or not I'm going to have a job in sports, and then the fact that I'm a Mountain West fan and they canceled, like, sent me into an absolute spiral of not being able to sleep. And so the break was very necessary, and now I'm just excited to get back to it and tear everybody a new one.
Dude, okay. So President Trump, he meets with Kevin, talks with Kevin Warren for about 20 minutes. Then he tweets out, "Oh, we're at the 1 yard line. The Big Ten is coming, essentially probably coming back." All of this, and my first thought was, oh, that's a pressure move. He says the 1 yard line. But then I also thought, is he talking about the minus nine, the minus 1 yard line, or the plus 1 yard line? So is there 99 yards to go, or is there 1 yard left to go? So, and it felt like a lot of pressure was being put on the Big Ten because of regardless of whether you support Trump or not, even. I heard a promo when I was doing my Fox Sports radio show today. I did the Gottlieb show today. And on the promo in between, I heard Clay actually say that this is now a political thing. So you don't have to just attack me saying it's a political thing. It was a political move for President Trump, because if you look at it at the situation, he has a bunch of states in play. He has Pennsylvania, Ohio, Nebraska, and a few other states that are particularly, you know, paramount to him winning. Oh, so let me read the list again. So you got Iowa, Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. Those are all in play. Those are going to be battleground states that give you enough electoral college votes that whoever wins those states is going to win. If you win all of them, then you're going to win the election, and vice versa, regardless of whether you're voting for Biden or you're voting for Trump, or if you are a person who's voting for Kanye West, if he's on any tickets. So it was very obvious why he was doing this. But the question is, was he going to be able to get it back? And the Big Ten essentially said, all right, if you can give us all our testing, contact tracing tests, all this stuff to mitigate the things that we thought were, well, that we believed that inhibited us from playing, then maybe we will talk about it. And then that led a tweet by Dan Patrick about October 10th, which is not even reasonable because you need 6 weeks to ramp up. And we found out that a lot of the kids in the Big Ten schools, because they're not on campus, are not even on campus. Some of them aren't even in the state because they're remote learning. So getting the kids back and then starting back up, and then you would have to quarantine them when they got back. So the earliest possible that is even reasonable would be October 24th, which is still way too early. But the Nebraska's athletic director, Bill Moose, who used to be Oregon's athletic director, ironically, and Nebraska is one of the three teams, Iowa, Ohio State, and Nebraska, who voted not to stop the season. He then comes out and says there's nothing to the October 10th date. Nothing to it. So now you have a standoff, but in the meantime, you have people asking, why wasn't the Pac-10, why wasn't the Pac-12 part of the tweet? Why wasn't the Pac-12 part of President Trump's agenda? And I thought it was pretty obvious, since we knew it was political, that the only real, I guess, two potential battleground states are what, Colorado and Arizona? And so if Nevada were part of the Pac-12, then maybe you would have gotten the tweet. But you have, you know, the state of California, who has four teams, UCLA and USC. They, three of the four, can't even play catch with balls yet. So getting the Pac-12 back wasn't even a possibility. Like, it doesn't matter how many people are mad, the states are shut down. Like, it's not about Pac-12 apathy, which people said. No, it's just about the fact that the Pac-12 put out an 18-page plan, made their medical advisor available. Regardless of whether you agreed with the decision, you can just say, all right, well, here it is. And we don't have the most important state open. And Washington and Oregon have already pushed high school football back. You had, like, it's just an untenable situation in the Pac-12. So that's why people aren't up in arms. And you didn't have the coaches essentially revolting as well.
And let's be very clear that, like, passion isn't a uniformly positive connotation type thing. Like, we're talking about, you know, somebody like Clay Travis put out that, like, there's just this huge passion gap and nobody's speaking out and nobody wants Pac-12 football. Plenty of people want Pac-12 football. I want Pac-12 football more than anything. It's just that people on the West Coast have a tendency not to kick and scream and cry and throw freaking Molotov cocktails, you know, into church buildings over disagreements on policy, right? Like, the most passionate parts of our country are also where you find a bunch of Civil War memorial burial sites, right? That's passion. Passion does not always serve you correctly. I would like for there to be football. Somebody else thinks that it's not necessarily safe to play right now. And if they have the ultimate power to make that decision, then I look at them and be like, ah, well, I guess that's the way it is. You know, I don't take to the streets and paint my entire body. You know, and of course, we're going to get 18 emails right now about the fact that, like, Portland is full of these weirdos who get into, you know, armed conflicts and everything like that. But guess what? Those people aren't football fans. So it just so happens that there are a truckload of extremely passionate, whether that's negative or positive, football fans all over the South and all over the Midwest. And I would even extend that into Lincoln, Nebraska, who's really, you know, Nebraska's being as much of a rabble rouser in all of this as anybody right now, as a group of their parents have decided to come out and sue the conference. Is there anybody that says that it's indicative of a lack of passion on this side of the country that we also didn't have eight parents come out and decide to try and sue for the idea to play, are forgetting the fact that we also are the part of the country that just had a bunch of players get together and threaten to hold out altogether in order to try to enact change. There's passion over here. It's just directed in a little bit different of a manner. You can be passionate and lay on your horn in traffic and get into road rage, or you can be passionate and start a nonprofit and change the world. Passion can be a driver for positives or negatives. And I'm not going to look at the Pac-12 and say the fact that there's not a bunch of, like, spoiled, rotten parents thinking that they can sue into getting their kids onto the field, I'm not going to take that as a negative for our conference.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with that. I mean, but people will tell you that, they'll say, oh, in the SEC, it just matters more. yeah, football does matter more, but they will also. Okay, so I'm going to go off on a tad bit of a tangent, and I don't mind because I said this, or I said it on radio, I said it on my podcast, on the Right Story Wrong podcast. You guys can tune into that. And what, and then the Arizona Varsity podcast, that's what it's called, the one that you do, right?
Yeah, I guess Arizona Varsity is my website. And then we got a bunch of different shows that we run, but yeah, you've been pretty consistent everywhere you've been.
Yeah. So what happened is this, is you had Max Kellerman say that, essentially that, actually, I'm going to read the exact quote to you. You had Max Kellerman say that SEC voters were susceptible to low quality information. And people got super, super upset about this. He said that Trump's base would be very upset that they didn't have football, where it's practically a religion. And he said that he would just propagandize it and say that and because they're almost immune to facts, and people got all upset about it. And the point I'm making about this is just about the SEC voters when they say it just matters more, because there's been truly a different sentiment about the coronavirus and about how to handle it, whether wearing masks is a good idea or whatever, largely in different states. I know that the states aren't perfect and all that, but here's the thing. Is I agreed with Max Kellerman because I went and looked. The 7 of the 10 least educated states in the country are in SEC country. You have Tennessee at 41, 44 Carolina, South Carolina, 45 Kentucky, 46 Alabama, 47 Arkansas, 48 Louisiana, and 50 Mississippi. So, I mean, like, is it, and that goes to say that people on the West Coast, when the SEC says it just matters more and that we're going to press on and play regardless, I think that there are a lot of people that look on and say, okay, I wish the Pac-12 had tried, but they can't say that the SEC people are just saying, all right, this is a much better solution and that there's nothing to it and that that's a good idea. Would you agree with that?
First of all, as an Arizonan who is also in that bottom 5 of 45 through 50 in education, let me just say it's nice in the winter. Okay, so
wait, no, Arizona's not in that.
Oh, trust me, we are. In teacher spending, classroom spending, reading, math, the highest we are in any category, I believe, is like 42. So I guess shout out to Pat Tillman. But we're not great in a lot of stuff. And I just want to throw out there that while a lot of people are in the classroom and learning because there's not going to be any place that they should be anyway, because there's either sleet or snow on the ground or all of the leaves have fallen and everything looks dead, it's very nice outside, and some of us skip class to go do things in fairer weather, and so you know there are definitely some reasons that I would say that the southern United States and southwestern United States are lower in those areas, but I don't know if I can go as far as endorsing what you're saying and what Max Kellerman is saying. I don't think it's that the people are more susceptible. I think this just perfectly aligns with what their value system is. You know, we get a lot of the people who go and fight in wars on our behalf from that part of the country. You know, right. When they're convicted, they're convicted, and they feel very, very strongly about football. And this is going to sound like I'm arguing against my own point, which is that, you know, but the truth is, I'm not saying that the SEC isn't passionate. I'm saying that the Pac-12 is. If I had to compare the two, obviously I'm going to say that fans go a lot more nuts for football in all of those conferences. But the Pac-12 doesn't lack for passion. It's just a completely different scenario in which people were more transparent. There is an abundance of passion, and as Dan Patrick would say, the passion bucket floweth over in some of those areas. And I think that people just feel real extra convicted about the things that they feel are deeply ingrained in their culture. People want to say that white people have no culture, but in the South, that culture is football. That culture is the flag. That culture is a lot of these things that have sort of come under scrutiny as of late. And so, you know, I think that they're already aligned with the president for the most part anyway, if you're just talking about the popular vote and where those electoral votes are going to go and who some of these supporters of these programs are. That's just the fact of the matter. They're going to be more easily influenced because they've allowed themselves to be, because they share a system of values. You know, whether or not, you know, Donald Trump, the New York billionaire, actually holds those values is up for debate, but he espouses them. And because he espouses them, and because they believe that he's on their team, and these are very team oriented people, they're going to roll with whatever he says, which comes back to our point that we made on our last podcast, which is I would put the responsibility on him, because a large part of the country that could have taken this more seriously from the get-go actually got their cues from him all along. And he's constantly been calling for states to remain open and for sports to be played. So, you know, not only is he saying something that they want to hear, they follow his lead anyway. It's not a matter of whether or not they're easily influenced, because if they were easily influenced, you could have said that they were easily influenced by the last president before him, or Bill Clinton before that, and that's just not necessarily the case. I think it's a matter of their values are aligned, and he happens to lobby for the things that they personally want to see. You know, and if and the thing about Donald Trump is he's out there with a machine gun taking shots at everybody, and once in a while he's got that machine gun pointed at something I don't like, and when he does that, I even feel it in me of like, yeah. Yeah, like I agree with that, and I'm glad that he's speaking to that issue forcefully. You got a bunch of people in SEC country who want to see football, and you have the president of the United States out there tweeting in all caps that they should be playing. You know, that is somebody who you're going to rally around if you're, you know, ideologically inclined to. And I don't think it makes them dumb, because if it did, then they'd be influenced by whoever's in charge, and I don't necessarily think that's the case.
Hmm. That's interesting. So now the next question is, so if the Big Ten, which I don't think it's going to play until, I mean, it may play on into the end of the, well, you know, like Thanksgiving time, which they were potentially talking about, but I was able to talk to Dennis Dodd today from CBS on the pod, I mean, on Fox Sports Radio today on the Gottlieb show. He said that he thinks that the more likely scenario is for them to play in January, that's probably most likely. So if the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are both kicking off in the spring, I think that marrying those two conferences together is probably the optimal scenario, because you don't want to try to do what Arizona high schools are doing right now. I think that you want to have instead of having the potentially three conferences play, let's assume that they finish their season. Despite, I don't think that that's going to be the outcome. Let's say that they finish. Then you're going to have them trying to start up the same time next season. And then the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are going to be in a lurch. So if you don't have them starting up at the same time, and then them playing against each other in exhibition games or bowl game tournaments or whatever you want to call it, then you're going to put yourself at a unique, weird spot and a disadvantage for the 2021 season.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're talking about a split season. I think that ultimately is what Arizona high schools are going to have to do. And so, you know, I'm for that. Maybe have a couple of out of conference games against Big Ten opponents and then play your 10 game slate and then see if you can't get a championship game against each other. The trick to all of that is going to be, then, is that where you're at permanently? And does it become like a junior college football thing where California has its own association and everybody else plays under the NGCAC banner? You know, if you've ever watched an episode of Hard Knocks, you know that there's some teams that all play for a national championship, and then California has its own thing.
You mean so, Last Chance U?
Did I say what did I say? Hard Knocks?
Hard Knocks, yeah.
Oh, man. But yeah, so I think that, do you end up in that situation permanently is the most important question you have to ask, because I think, and you know, you might disagree with this, I think it's riskier to kids this age and more detrimental to kids this age to play two seasons in one calendar year than it is to play in the middle of this pandemic. I personally feel that way.
See, I don't know, man. I don't know the answer to that. I do know that playing two seasons in one year is potentially very physically taxing. I think that counting the number of days from the time that the season ends until the next season starts is probably optimal, right? Like,
right. That if you and that's look why at- we should be playing a split season. Everyone probably should have pushed out to January, and then we should have had like 8 games in the spring and then 8 games in the fall and a playoff or something like that.
Yep.
That would have been the way to make sure everybody's on the same page. But the other conferences that have stayed in so far, they need the Big Ten to come back really badly. Because if the Big Ten doesn't come back, then
it's the biggest conference. Value. It is the biggest conference. It is the, as much as people want to tout the SEC, it is the premier conference. They bring in the most money, highest television revenues, highest attendance. Like, it is the bell cow of college football.
Yeah, it really is. And the longer that they're apart from what everybody else is doing, the more it hurts the overall product and ability to schedule bowl games and it just everything. So it, either the Pac-12 and the Big Ten are going to offset for what might be permanently, or the Pac-12 and the Big Ten are making a move in the name of safety, and then they're going to ignore the dangers that could potentially come with putting kids on the field for 20 of 52 weeks, at a minimum 20 of 52 weeks.
Could this, I just had this idea right now while we were talking. Could this potentially be a huge benefit for the Pac-12 if you're now married with the Big Ten? And now are we pushing, and as a side note, are we now pushing more toward that 64 team conference alliance? Or two power conferences? Like, if the Big Ten and the Pac-12 merge, and now you have 26 teams that are basically under the Big Ten umbrella, because they pretty much do everything together already now, and the states are pretty, you know, they work together, and then you could have all the Southern teams, essentially Southern and Southwest teams, married to each other in that way.
Here's the way everyone gets rich. You split college football. You have the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12, and you throw the American Conference in there, and you throw a couple of the independents that are over on the East Coast, and you have all of them dominate the fall and suck up all that TV money, and you turn the conference that Memphis is in into a new power conference, and essentially you have 5 power conference. You create the same environment that you have now, and you create it without the Big Ten and the Pac-12. And then spring rolls around, and you have the exact same thing, exact same product, but you have the Mountain West and the Pac-12 and the Big Ten and everybody else that's part of that spring cycle. Maybe even the Big Sky gets elevated and those programs grow and the schools grow along with them, and you have year-round football.
Yeah, I but think then that, that doesn't work because then players would never go to the Pac-12, because then you would be essentially ineligible for the NFL draft.
But that's when you would, if you're breaking up the NCAA, then that's essentially when you would be able to possibly put different rules into place. Like, you can make somebody eligible from the conferences that play in the spring. You can make them eligible for the NFL draft after two seasons. Can you imagine what that would do for some of these kids? You come in and you're a star as a freshman and a sophomore, and then you get to take a year off to train before the NFL draft. You could implement different rules that give an advantage to the Pac-12 school. Then if you have three good years, then you just take the ensuing year off to train anyway. Yeah, but if you think you're a premier player, if you think you're a premier player.
It's the NFL that makes that rule, though.
What I'm saying. It doesn't matter that it's the NFL that makes that rule. What I'm saying is the NFL still sets the rule that you have to be 3 years out of high school, right?
Yeah.
But if you can profit off your name, image, and likeness, and you can go to the Pac-12 and you can be eligible to turn pro after 2 years, and what turning pro means for you is different. It's a year of training, and what would be your redshirt sophomore or what would be your junior year, you take that year to train, to build your brand, and to jump into the draft. And that would be your way to look at elite prospects and say, you might want to go and you might want to play for 3 years at Oklahoma State, or you could come over to the University of Washington, and if you're a star as a freshman and sophomore, you declare right then and there, that's your film, and then you just go train with Exos or whoever you want to spend your time with for the rest of that year. So you can mitigate that timetable, and then for anybody else who's ready after 3 years, they can take that extra year if they want to. As well, you offset the system, or you put the NFL in a position to be able to draft more than once. And what would the NFL love more than anything than the ability to hold two separate drafts? You don't have to be on that calendar. You could come in as sort of a supplemental player, and that might be a complete disaster. And I could be wrong, but we'd learn over time. I'm just saying, there's ways to make this work.
There are ways to make it work. I think that they all involve playing in the fall, and I'm in on the super conferences. I just think that that's the optimal scenario, and that you're going to get, like, that's the way to the money, and that's the way to glory for the Pac-12 as well. 'Cause you can, like, make a huge splash at this point in time. Now,
But you know, our podcast is called the Pac-12 Apostles. And if you make a super conference, there's not going to be a Pac-12 anymore. And then who am I going to hang out with every week, George?
We will just change the name of the podcast, Ralph.
The name of the podcast is the only thing I brought to the table. You're carrying us. So if that's gone, then I'm going to really feel like just the Danny DeVito in the Twins relationship.
That's funny. You have the dude, you bring so much to this podcast, bro. I can't even tell you. You come up with all these witty ideas and thoughts and all this stuff, which is great, because it's totally different than how I think, which is absolutely awesome. But do you think so? I guess the next thing is recruiting. How is this going to then impact recruiting in the Pac-12? Because if the ACC, Big 12, and SEC all end up playing, then could you have a player like, I mean, I think that it's kind of clear that the Pac-12 may lose out on Corey Foreman, who's the number one player in the country, depending on where you look. And, you know, like, he may have gone to USC or Oregon. But now, especially with them not playing, that gives a lot of ammo in negative recruiting to players. And we're seeing players in the transfer portal and all of that. Like, do you think that this hurts Pac-12 recruiting?
Yes. I mean, it does. But at the same time, if people want to use this is where I would tread lightly if I was an ACC or SEC school trying to go come west and go after some of these elite recruits. If you do that, then my advice to the Pac-12 schools would be to just treat the entire recruiting landscape the way that Arizona State has for the last year. And you start calling these Western Pennsylvania kids and get them on FaceTime and walk your ass down to the beach if you're Chip Kelly. Because if they really want to play this game, if these schools out in, you know, BFE Wisconsin really want to play games like this, then it's time to just go and get their kids. Because their kids, they wouldn't mind seeing the beach. They really wouldn't. The only reason that the Pac-12 isn't a bigger thorn in the side of everyone else in the country in the way that they recruit is that there's enough kids on the West Coast and that it's a little bit cost prohibitive. But when you consider the fact that we're all just a phone call, a FaceTime away now, and that the landscape of recruiting is probably going to change in the era post COVID, and the majority of a lot of these kids' visits could end up being virtual because of this, it's time for the West Coast schools to just say, "Hey, a kid's a kid," and you go after some of these kids that we're thinking about, you know, potentially spending the winter in Ann Arbor. Or, you know, or wherever else. And I know I've made a Big Ten reference, even though they're in the same boat. But like, I think that if the Pac-12 wanted to, they could make everybody's life hard if they took a national approach to the recruiting that they were doing. And so I would tread lightly. I would go after the big name kids, but I wouldn't make this a focal point of the negative recruiting that you do. I just wouldn't. If you look at this video that Antonio Pierce just put out.
Oh my God, dude. What did you think of that video? Like, I just noticed how many times they showed his Bentley.
Yeah. So first of all, Antonio Pierce is in charge. This is so if there was ever any illusion about it, that's completely been done away with by this video. But one of the things Antonio Pierce says within the video is, you know, you can shovel snow, you can shovel sand, can't shovel sunshine. And now that they've taken this national approach, I'm telling you, like, that it's the doors are open for the Pac-12 to go out and do stuff like this. But I will say that video made me laugh because it was like incredibly well scripted, flashy MTV Cribs style propaganda for the first 4 minutes, and then 1 minute of absolute nonsense from Herm Edwards, which I adored every
with
single
Sparky
second. Yeah, absolutely. Like, there is absolutely no reason for Herm to be masked and for Sparky to have his entire like headgear on in the same. There's no reason for them to be flipping coins. There was this thing that Herm Edwards said about you get to be tails because you're Sparky. George, what the hell does that even mean?
I have no idea what that meant.
I've been thinking about that line.
I was thinking about that when he did it. I was like, I don't understand what this means. Am I tripping? But I was like, Herm probably just said
this. I'm obsessed with it. No, that alludes, from what I can tell, to absolutely nothing, but it's been the only thing I can think about for the last 24 hours. And then beyond that, you have the thing where he's going through the video game and he points out Brandon Ayuk and N'Keal Harry, which made me laugh. And then showing their ratings up on the screen because they're still like rookies, the Madden ratings low.
Yeah.
So that part cracked me up. But everything about that video was absolutely hilarious to me. And there are a lot of coaches and programs that are doing some really, really good stuff with appealing to get PJ Fleck at Minnesota. Holy hell, that guy is a marketing whiz. And so like there are schools that do a good job with that. But I mean, just if you've ever watched MTV Cribs, I think you probably enjoyed that video. If you've ever been to Tempe, the entire time you were just wondering how far they're going to take the eye candy. You know, because yeah, there's the stereotype of Tempe as like a party school and everything like that, but they kept it pretty focused on the fact.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, because you can't, dude. They would have to reshoot the video. A lot of people would be upset about too many female references, as you know, as objectivity. Objectifying them, yeah, that would not be the move, bro.
No, nobody would get upset. because no one out here has any passion, George, so you don't have to worry about that. But the thing that cracked me up is they showed Devin Booker and the Phoenix Suns, and they were like, come out here and you can go to Suns games. And I was thinking to myself, like, wait, like, is this assuming the kids have money or
right?
That part of it was weird. And then the other part of me was like, as a Suns fan and knowing how terrible they've been over the last decade, I was like, oh, because there's a lot of seats just open in the stadium. But yeah, no, that video was hilarious. But I think that it illustrates my overall point that, like, you could these places out here, George, I love the Pac-12. It is beautiful and it is diverse. And I mean, I could wax poetic about every single one of these places and their importance and their relevance to the culture out here. And if I can do it, then someone who's getting paid to do it is going to do 10 times as good of a job. You throw some of these videos together, you start sending them to kids that live in Alabama and Arkansas and you know, outside the Blue Ridge Mountains, and you can make quite an impact. So I think that might be the future of Pac-12 recruiting, is just put, you know, using the production value that exists in the film school out at UCLA to put stuff together and lure some of these kids from all over the country.
Yeah, I agree with you, dude, that if you're going to come after the Pac-12 players, then they should go on full offense and take all your 3-star kids. Like, because those are the ones that you're going to for sure be able to pull out of there. So take some of the layups, dude. Like,
yeah, so you get 5 official visits, right? You said you're originally from Tennessee. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, yeah.
So let's say that you stayed there. Like, let's assume that in that story you stayed there. And all of a sudden, your official visits, you know, you've got the locals recruiting you real hard, but UCLA wants you to fly out for an official, and so does Arizona State, and for good measure, so does Stanford. Do 3 of your 5 official visits go outside your region?
Probably, dude. We want to thank you guys for listening to the Pac-12 Apostles podcast. We are back. So it felt good today, Ralph. It felt good to be back at home with you doing the podcast, back with our Pac-12 Apostles family. And but from now on, we will announce our breaks. I think that's fair.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully it was good to get a break from us. Hopefully it was good for you all as well.
Yep. All right. Peace out. Catch you guys later. 5-star review. Tell a friend. Make sure you share. Peace out.